you're telling me my wife's right about this, and I need to have a binder full of a receipt for everything I've ever paid for.
Well, your wife is definitely right. That part you got, Matt.
I figured that was probably right, Matt Robeson, Mike Morton, Financial Life Planning. You do want to talk about receipts today. Please, please, people, continue listening. I think this is valuable. I know receipts. I hate receipts. Receipts suck. You know the worst form of receipt on earth? CVS. I'm talking to you, CVS. Yes, we want you to sponsor this show, but fix your freaking receipts. They're 15 feet long. Does anyone else have this problem?
Plus, did you know the ink on the receipts is one of the worst things for you chemically? Do not touch those receipts.
Really?
Yes, yes.
They're made of partially de-weaponized plutonium?
Yes, that's exactly what they're made of.
Oh my gosh, that is remarkable. You know, the best hack, then I promise we'll get into the actual episode, because you actually have a compelling argument for why it could be worth like $500,000 to you to save receipts.
Exactly. So, only if you want to save tens of thousands of dollars.
I want to get to that. Oh, and I also want to get to your provocative quote at the end that's very zen. Mm. I really, you've got a one thing at the end that's like, I'm still scratching my head about this. I might have to sit down and like take a nap and think about it. So we'll want to get to that. Anyway, receipts. Receipts are freaking awful. But here's a hack for you if you hate the CVS receipt.
All right.
When I originally signed up for my CVS card, they completely misspelled and mispronounced my name. And they said, do we have this correct? And I said, yes. That's correct.
Yes.
So now at least I'm in their system as some crazy name that I won't repeat on this show because I don't want them to hear it and fix it. And so for all the data aggregators out there who are going to hack their way in and find out Matt takes vitamin C 1,000 milligrams a day, well, I should sell him my Florida timeshare, whatever it is. Good luck. Good luck figuring out who the hell I am.
You fooled those guys, Matt. Good job.
CVS, just do something about the damn receipts. But what you're telling me, what you're telling me here is there is a value for this when it comes to your house. What do you mean?
Yeah. So I'll tell you a quick little story. A couple of clients of mine, we'll call them Dave and Joy. They bought their home for about $1 million, $1.1 million, about 20 years ago. All right, so $1.1 million. 20 years ago. And of course, real estate's done well, you know, it goes up and down, but it's done pretty well. And they recently sold it for $2.3 million.
Nice.
Okay. So that's a gain of $1.2 million over 20 years. And when you have a gain, you might know this, Matt, when you have a gain of money, the government likes to take some of that money. They like to tax you on your gains. All right. And so with a $1.2 million gain, that's a lot of tax because the government wants like 15% of that gain, that one over $1 million. However, because they put in over $500,000 of improvements to their home, they were able to avoid a couple $100,000 of taxes. So they saved a couple $100,000 in their pockets.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Explain to me why this means that I have to start licking my CVS receipt.
Only if you want the de-weaponized plutonium actually in your system through your tongue. It'll absorb faster through there, Matt.
I'm hoping to be able to shoot webs out of my wrists in the future. So yes, I want that.
So the receipts, so we're skipping to the end. And that's a story, you know, saving, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. And because you have to save the receipts for those home improvements, they had done the home improvements and that's where it gets back to saving the receipts.
You really have to document this for the IRS. It's like, hey, my house didn't have this kitchen before. Now it does. Yeah. See, I have the receipts. You have to do that.
Well, the IRS is a pretty stickler for the rules and they want to see evidence. Yes. So in all things, actually for many different topics, if you get audited by the IRS, they're going to want to see some paper trail.
All right. Let's stipulate what I said at the top, what you concluded at the top, which is my wife's right about everything. I agree. She's right about absolutely everything. But she keeps all the receipts. And I do mean all of the receipts. She actually used to do this thing. Does anyone else? Is this a thing that like lots of people do? Every time we filled up the car with gas, she had a little booklet. And you had to enter the mileage, like how many miles you were at, how many gallons you put in, how much you paid, a bunch of other stuff, Like, do other people do this?
Yeah, that's a thing. That's absolutely a thing. In fact, now there are apps that do it, that exact same thing, but on your phone.
And this is good because I used to tell her, like, well, obviously, if you don't write that down, then the car won't start.
Yeah, that's it. It's so that the car will feel happy and it'll get you to your next destination. It's for calculating gas mileage, Matt. Come on, don't you know anything? For gas mileage and the price of gas, depending on where you are.
Dude, the price of gas is listed on the outside of the gas station. And
yeah, but then you want to know. You want to know, like, which gas stations. No, that's what my parents tell me all the time. Oh, you got to stop over here. This gas station, it's now, you know, 362 instead of 364.
Yes.
Yeah, you've got to stop over there. Go to that gas station.
Drive 15 miles, hang a left at the guy who's stroking the horns of a goat at the corner. I don't know why I came up with that. And then you're right there. Yeah. And you save the 2 cents.
Yeah, you're right there.
All right, we are way off track. But okay. Right, assuming my wife is right about all things about keeping receipts, what you're talking about here with getting this exclusion from your capital gains taxes, it doesn't apply to all receipts. Like, she's probably right about all that, but not this piece.
She's right about everything, but we don't have to save every single receipt for this job. There might be other reasons. I'm sure she's got other good reasons. But for this job, let's back it up and explain what we're talking about. So I said when you have a gain, right? The government likes to tax some of that gain. So in other words, you make an investment in the stock market, you put in $20,000, a few years later, you sell it for $30,000, you gained $10,000. The government's like, oh, yep, we'll take a little bit of that. We'll take a small slice of that gain. So there are income taxes on your salary, and there's capital gains taxes on when you have a gain, something appreciates in value. When you realize the gain, you are taxed, generally speaking. And realization of the gain is when you actually get the money. So in my stock example, you sell it a few years later, you get $30,000. So you just realized $10,000 of gain. And that's the point at which you have to tell the government and they take a slice. So in this home example, Dave and Joy bought it for $1.1 million. It appreciated over 20 years, but they never realized that gain. They're living in their home. Until such time, they sell the house for $2.3 million. Now, suddenly, they've realized the gain of $1.2 million, and the government wants to tax some of that $1.2 million. Now, the good news is, when you sell your primary home, a home that you've been living in as your primary residence, you get to exclude some of the gain from taxes. And it's amazing, because if you're a couple, you can exclude up to $500,000 of gain. And if you're individual, it's half that, $250,000, okay, of gain. That's included. You don't need, Matt, to keep any receipts for that, okay? You don't need receipts for excluding $500,000 of gain from your home.
Oh, wow.
But in this example, yeah. So that, let me pause there. You just do it. So when you have a home, so you buy a home for $500,000, you sell it for-
standard deduction.
It's like the standard deduction.
Got it.
Exactly. Yeah. You buy it for $500,000, you sell it for $700,000, $200,000 of gain, no mess, no fuss. Like, you don't owe taxes on any of that. You don't need any receipts.
Fabulous. Okay.
Yeah. So that's great. So you get this exclusion, right? So that's great to know. But the thing is, in this example, $1.2 million. Okay. So they get $500,000 exclusion. So they're going to pay taxes on $700,000. Right, so you're still going to pay taxes on $700,000 of gain. But if you can prove that you improved your home, if you put money into that asset, your home, then you can also exclude that. So it's, in other words, like, say you got like you bought a 2-bedroom house for a couple hundred thousand, and then you made it into a 4-bedroom house. You put in another $200,000 to make it a 4-bedroom house, and then you sell it for $1 million later. The government doesn't get to tax all that because you put in more money. You put in more money into your home, and so you're not going to have to pay taxes on that gain.
All right. So is it a one-for-one thing? So, like, I put in $100,000 to add an extension onto my house. Do I add that $100,000, or is it like, is there some kind of a weird calculation of like, well, you put in $100,000, but that accounted for $200,000 worth of greater value?
Yeah. No, it's one for one, and that's where the receipts do come in.
I see.
So when you put in that addition for $100,000 on an addition, save those receipts, and you get to exclude $100,000 from taxes from the gain.
One thing that we both learned when we were both economic students is that people respond to incentives. So has the government created a perverse incentive here where when you're going to sell your house in order to avoid that gain, you have an incentive to take a hammer to a feature of your house that otherwise looks good so that it sells for less, and therefore your gain is less than the $500,000 exclusion?
Yeah. Yeah, of course, because in the previous example, I don't want to sell my stock for $30,000. You know what? I'm going to sell it for just $22,000. You know, I don't need that extra $8,000. I really don't want to pay capital gains on that.
Right, because you're not being taxed 100%. It's only 15%.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
No hammer incentive.
No incentive.
All right, so keep your receipts. Mike, let's say you're a guy. I don't want to give away who. Let's call him Matt R. No, wait. That gives away too much. M. Robeson. And let's say,
Robeson,
even though you have a brilliant wife who keeps receipts for everything, maybe from time to time you don't. And therefore, you get to the point that you're going to sell your house and you realize you have screwed this up and you don't have the receipts. What do you do, man? Can you call your contractor 10 years later? Hey, you remember me? I'm M. Robeson.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Make sure the IRS doesn't audit you when you claim that you put in $100,000 into your home. Cross your fingers. I don't know. Is that a valid planning strategy?
Hope is not a strategy. Okay, I get it. So you really are. This is why we're doing this show. You want people to learn the lesson now.
You really do want to save your receipts. Other things you can do is just evidence, right? So like if you had before and after photos, you know, it'd be great evidence of like, yes, this was a 2-bedroom house. Now it's 4 bedrooms. Clearly, like when we bought it, here's the photos, you know, things like that will really help. But it's proving evidence that you put in money into your home, you know, to add to that cost basis is what we call it.
Oh, I like the idea of before and after photos. It's like I put my house on this diet and look, you know, massive gains.
That's right. Massive gains. The workout plan.
Right. This only applies to primary residence, so I can't, there's no exclusion for like you've got a second home, you got a vacation home, you know, something
yeah,
like that.
So getting back to the exclusion you get for free, like that standard deduction, like the way you put that, $250,000 for individuals, $500,000 for couples. You have to own the home and be a primary resident 2 of the last 5 years. So 2 years of the last 5 years, you have to have used it as your primary residence, and then get that exclusion. And the reason for that is that this does not apply to vacation homes or investment properties. Those are more like, hey, yeah, we're investing in this, and I bought it and sold it 5 years later and made a couple $100,000. The government's like, well, then you need to pay taxes on that couple $100,000. This was an investment as if you put it into the stock market.
Oh.
So you don't get that exclusion. Only primary homes.
Got it. So you don't have the exclusion. Does the same thing go then for a second home with receipts though? Like, can you get some off of your capital gains if you make improvements to the second home?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So the exclusion does not apply, but that's what we call a cost basis. So if I bought a vacation home for $500,000 and that's my cost is $500,000. Say in 10 years it doubles, it's now worth $1 million, and I sell it, I've made $500,000 of gain. $500,000 of cost basis, let's use different numbers so they're not the same, it's gone to $750,000. $500,000 of cost basis, a gain of $250,000. Now, if I put in $100,000 of improvements, I bought it for $500,000. But my cost basis, I now add the other $100,000. I spent another $100,000 of my money, right? So I put in $500,000. I spent another $100,000. So now my cost basis is $600,000. And so my gain is only $150,000.
Got it. All right. Should I then constantly be moving to any house that I'm thinking of selling eventually?
Yes. This is exactly what you could do, Matt. So this is one of my plans for the future. So I told you need to live there 2 out of the last 5 years. So a couple of points. If you have moved out of your home, okay, you were living in a home, you decided to upgrade or change, move, and you moved 2 years ago and rented it out. So it was your primary residence Now you moved out 2 years ago and you're renting it currently. If you sell it, you could still get the exclusion for free, right? Because you lived there two of the last 5 years. Okay, so out of the last 5 years, you were living there. So it's a good time to evaluate, hey, should I maybe sell this home? It's really appreciated by $400,000. The rent's really good. I like that. But if you sell it, you won't pay any capital gains tax. That's a big deal. 15% yeah. of $400,000, you know, if that's the gain, right? That's a lot of money that you exclude from taxes. So be aware of that if you've moved out. Flip side is also true. If you currently own a vacation home that you might want to move into, you can leave your current residence, take the exclusion on that when you sell it, move into your vacation home, live there for a while, and then sell that and also get the exclusion on that property.
Interesting. So if you're going to take this strategy, so make sure you don't buy a vacation home in a place that's, you know, crappy. Like a place
where you don't want a vacation.
Yeah. Don't buy crappy vacation homes. Well, yet another brilliant insight from Mike Morton.
That was from Matt Robeson. That was not from Mike Morton.
Bad ideas come from me. This is a 30-second new segment that I want to call Matt Makes Things Too Complicated. We've talked before on this show about capital losses and that you can offset your capital. You can actually harvest your losses if you have capital losses.
What need if special machinery for that. Special machinery to harvest those losses.
Pressure. What do you do? Can you take advantage of that? Like, let's say your house has lost value. This happened to me because it happened to me. I'll just put it that way. We actually sold the house for less than we bought it for. And this kind of thing does happen to people. If there's a capital loss there, you can help you on taxes.
Other brilliant hacks by Matt Robeson. Make sure buy properties where you lose money. It can help you in the future. Trust me.
I didn't have a crystal ball, man. Like, things happen, man.
All right, we definitely need a new segment.
It wasn't a strategy. It was like the market, dude.
Hope is not a strategy, man. Hope is not a strategy.
Failure is not a strategy either. I'll put it that way.
Good strategy. Hope and failure. Matt's new segment. How to make things more complicated.
We were hoping that this would work out, but we failed.
Right. Yes, capital losses, Matt.
Yes, capital losses. Yes, you should have saved on your taxes if you had any capital gains that you could offset.
Well, it's like back to the hammer strategy. You know, yeah, you could take less money if you want to.
I'm not suggesting that you go out and look for money losing proposition. But if this
should happen, at least
the upside here is if you have other capital gains, which apparently if you're just a crappy investor, you will not.
you should be able
to offset them.
Good news, it rolls forward forever. Bad news, it dies with you, that big capital loss. Your kids can't take advantage of it. Yes, the answer to your question is that yes, capital losses can offset future capital gains. So making lemonade out of lemons is, taxes, we were saying this before, like this whole idea of kind of moving into the vacation home and getting the exclusion. Taxes are a really big deal. I mean, let me give you like a personal story. I might do this with our vacation home. All right, I might move into it in the future, 5 or 10 years from now, to do exactly this strategy. And if I save 15% of a $500,000 gain, that's real money. taxes are a big deal. And it's funny, I think back to when we were younger and talking to young people today, like taxes, whatever. I mean, you just can't compute, you know, between salary and living and other stuff. But everybody I talk to as they get older, and especially as they're getting ready to retire, taxes is the whole thing. It's like, how much is the tax is a really big deal. It's a lot of money over your lifetime. So looking for ways to exclude
life cycle earnings, right? Like, you know, when you're young, taxes are really not that much money, yeah. You know,
that's right.
You're older, they are. And also you're more likely to be on more of a fixed income kind of situation. So
yeah, but it does compound. So getting back to the younger listeners and the Roth IRAs and stuff like that, you don't realize the compounding that's going to happen later on. So like you just said, pay the tax then while you're young, you know, it's lower. And then it compounds, your savings compound.
Your future self will thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unlike Matt's future self with his home that he had to sell underwater, did not thank him.
It just was what it was. Well, you know, what happened was, I'm not going to get into a long story. I will just tell you.
Spare us the details.
Along the way, something magical happened where we ended up turning it into a rental property. And then the Bernie Sanders campaign rented it and put a bunch of young staffers there, who predictably turned it into a giant bong. I am not making this up. The entire house was a bong. I would say the net marijuana output of a small country had been consumed there. There were also, I'm not making this up, about 2,000 cigarette butts because they weren't smoking enough other stuff. Bernie Sanders, people.
All right.
There it is. All right.
You were once one of those young staffers, Matt.
I never was. I didn't inhale, at least not that much. I gotta
not
say,
that, not
no
like
one
that.
Should inhale that much. All right, so keep your all receipts. Right. Keep your receipts. My wife is right about everything. Let us get to our one thing, and you've got a quote for us.
All right, one thing. This is a quote by Seth Godin, who is best-selling author, and the quote is: "When we lean into exploration, we're far more likely to find something that matters because we worked for it." And this reminded me.
Yeah. What is this prompt for you?
Yeah. What it prompted for me was this idea that, which is now true. It's funny how science is catching up to things that we intuitively know, right? Now we can like do brain scans and prove like all kinds of connections. And this is the same thing, which is when you work for something, it has way, way more value. And now they've proven that with the brain scans and everything. Like when you put in some hard effort. So there was a study about test scores. You know, if you got an A in a subject you're really good at, it was like, yeah, you know, it's good. You know, I got an A on that test. And when you got an A on a subject where you're just not that good, you had to put in a lot more effort. The students felt way more proud, you know, way, way better about that. And it's all tied to the effort. So the thing to me is that it's worth putting in effort to accomplish things that you will feel great about it.
But Seth Godin is applying it to the idea of exploration. So what he's saying in this case is, if you are committed to exploring something, then you're more likely to find something because you're more likely to find something that matters to you.
That matters.
Because you put in the effort. It reminds me of the Harry Potter idea of the dark Lord Voldemort marked the person who was going to have the power. He marked Harry Potter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically gave him the power that he ultimately had by choosing him. And by putting your mark on something with effort, you're going to end up empowering it. And so if you're in search of something and you're putting in a lot of effort, you're likely to find answers that matter to you.
Yeah. Did Voldemort really choose to mark Harry? Was that a choice?
It was between Harry and Neville.
Mm,
right.
And I have to go back.
He chose Harry and it's like, you know.
That reminds me that I never read the very last book. Did you know? And you know, they took the book. So I read all the books.
So you don't know that Hermione was Voldemort all along? No,
wait, what? No, here's the funny thing, Matt. I'm sitting in the movie, you know, because the movies, right? And
the
then I'm sitting and
sucked.
They split. Okay, fine.
They're
but anyway,
terrible.
The point is this. I'm sitting in the last movie. Remember they split the book into two movies?
Yeah.
So I watched the first movie. I watched the first movie, Matt, and I walked out of the theater. I was like, I don't think I read that book.
It's a great realization.
I was like, should I read the book now or should I watch the second half of the movie?
All right. I've got, I know this is called one thing. This is going to be one and a half things because I'm going to give you one on that score, which is, have you watched Three Body Problem on Netflix?
Yes.
Have you read the book?
No.
Dude, I'm on the third book in the trilogy. This guy, Xixin Liu, he is a genius. Like, he is just full of, it's just a fountain of ideas. Now, you do have to put up with a little bit of, you know, like in Lord of the Rings, there's a lot of songs that you want to skip through
That's right.
real fast.
Right.
There's kind of the equivalent here of like a lot of lyrical description. But man, this guy is inventive and the ideas are so compelling. Read the trilogy. That's
all right.
I'm putting my one and a half things. All right.
All right. One and a half things. Good.
All right. We had better wrap up here before we go too far and we get to two actual things. For Mike Morton, Matt Robeson, see you next time.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for joining us on Financial Life Planning. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to and rate the podcast on Apple iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It makes a massive difference. If you have a comment or question, please email me, mike@mortonfa.com. Until next time, thanks for tuning in. This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered for investment advice. Opinions expressed are as of the date of recording. Such opinions are subject to change. I cannot guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the data presented here.